game we're going to play is called Foursquare. There's going to be actually four scenes going on. Each improviser is going to be in two separate scenes. I can switch between these scenes by saying...
For decades in Chicago, the Second City has been making audiences laugh with their improv skills. You might be familiar with some of those who've passed through the Second City, including John Candy, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Amy Poehler. But did you know that the Second City also uses some of the same improvisational techniques to help organizations improve the way they do business? Two Second City executives have just written a book about that. Kelly Leonard, Executive Vice President of the Second City, is with us from Chicago. Kelly, welcome.
Hi.
And we are also joined by Tom Yorton, the CEO of Second City Works, both of them the authors of this new book, Yes And, How Improvisation Reverses No But Thinking and Improves Creativity and Collaboration. Tom, welcome to you.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
And Kelly, I want to start with you because you've been there at the Second City since the late 1980s. When did the idea of using the kind of improv that you do to entertain people for businesses take hold?
Well, rumor has it that very early in our existence, Coke came and wanted us to do some corporate work for them. And of course, we said no. We just turned down the money. years later, we got a little smarter and we started working with companies in a variety of ways. But it really wasn't until Tom joined the business in 2001 that we truly started to apply the actual stuff that all the greats, the Stephen Colberts of the world, Tina Fey, the stuff that they practiced in and made them so great, we took that right into the corporate world, and now it's a thriving part of our business.
But where did that idea come from that these kinds of things would translate to the corporate world?
Probably the most natural corporate applications was corporate entertainment. Business people would see a regular stage performance. They say, that's pretty cool. Can you do that at my conference? And then we learned that, you know, you have business people showing up taking classes at the training center. And we started to see, hey, wait, the same – really, it's a soft skills you wish you would have learned in business school but never did. How to listen, how to read a room, how to create something out of nothing, how to respond to adversity, how to bounce back and be resilient in the face of failure. That's what improv really gets to. And we saw there was a really direct connection between the stuff we were teaching for aspiring actors and the stuff we were teaching corporate people.
And at the bedrock of this is this idea, yes, and, that you can take an idea and build on it and not say, no, let's go in this different direction, but rather help each other out to build something strong.
Yeah, I mean, I think business operates in a different mode. And, you know, it's I wouldn't characterize business as a yes and environment. I spent about 20 years in big companies on the other side of the desk before I got to Second City. And there's a lot of good stuff that happens in that world. But for all the planning and controls and governance and process and procedures, the things that big companies do and big organizations do, you need to be nimble, adaptive, agile. And that's what success is in business.
With improvisation, ground zero is yes and. You can't do anything if you don't start in agreement, affirming what your partner says, and then building from there. When you say no to an idea at the beginning, you're not just saying no to an idea, you're also saying no to an individual. And that person might not bring up another idea. So it's just as important to practice this work with each other because you're trying to build the skills of creativity.
But aren't there some ideas that are just bad?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you got plenty of time to kill them later. thing is, the reality is a lot of really incredible ideas started out and everyone thought they were insane. The iPod got rejected year after year. So we're just saying you can let bad ideas linger for a little bit because there's plenty of time later to kill them off.
One of the other things you talk about in the book, which I found interesting, was the idea of building a what you call an ensemble rather than a team. And I wonder if one of you could tell us how you see the difference and the distinction.
Teamwork in businesses has become kind of a jaded term. People have suffered through way too many bad team building and team bonding experiences where what happens in that 2-hour session runs completely counter to what their day-to-day experience is. So we like the idea of ensemble because, you know, teamwork implies competition, whereas ensemble implies collaboration. We think that there's a greater commitment to taking care of ensemble mates and having each other's back, at least in the work that we do, than a lot of the experience that we've seen in business. So we think that, you know, teams are fine. It's not that we don't think there's a role for it, but we think that ensemble is actually a more powerful term and a term that really shows how people can work more collaboratively in pursuit of a goal.
Tom, give me an example of something that you would do with a corporate group to show them the value of these ideas. What kind of exercise would you do?
Yeah, one great exercise that we use a lot around team and agility is something called word at a time story, where we might have a group of 6 to 10 people in a circle, or if you have a, 30 people, divide up in five groups, and you instruct them to have a tell a story that's never been told before, but they have to do it one word at a time, where each person just gets one word in the narrative, and they go around and around a couple of times, and you learn a couple of really important things in that exercise. One, you learn are you the kind of person who needs to control where a story goes? Because you'll be frustrated because invariably it goes somewhere else because you don't get to offer more than one word. Mm. You experience another thing, too, that you're the guy when the story's coming around, you say, the right word is armadillo. I'm going to say armadillo. And then the only thing that makes sense when it gets to you is to say and.
Right.
And that kind of thing.
You have to just be a building block. You can't be the center of attention on that one.
Yes. So that's an important idea. And the idea of seemingly small contributions matter greatly to the whole.
I think we should try that one. I think it's kind of fun. Why don't we start with Kelly, and then we'll go Tom and then me. Let's just at least try this so that people can hear how it goes.
Good Lord. Here we
All
go.
Right. Here we go. I
think
that
I
want
potatoes
tonight.
I
have
no
appetite
for
potatoes
tomorrow,
but
tomorrow
milkshakes.
We just blew it.
No, I was saying.
was I not supposed to say "but"? By the way,
No.
You can say that.
No. That's exactly the point, and that's exactly how that exercise would go. Where you understand why Kelly and I are not on stage. But that's exactly how that exercise.
Again.
Yeah. For the love of God, let's not do that. But that is exactly the point. That what I just did, I got caught up in my head. And I was thinking
Why?
About the right word. Yeah, probably just trying to think too hard about getting the right word. And that's an important thing. So in business, we spend an awful lot of time needing to be right. And we've all been in that meeting where there are 12 people, all of whom think they have the best answer or the right answer. And that's a really unproductive conversation.
The other thing is it's simple listening exercises. We talk a lot in the book about the fact that you don't practice listening as a grown-up. Frankly, you don't practice a lot of listening, when you're growing up either. But it's a skill and it's a muscle. And so a lot of these exercises simply put you in the act of practicing being a better listener.
One of the other interesting concepts I found in this book is the idea that people in business are often so afraid to fail. They don't have the confidence in their own ideas that they don't come up with those ideas because they don't give themselves the space to do that. They're afraid of failure.
Without a doubt. Go ahead, Kel.
Fear is the worst. Yeah, fear is the worst thing. I mean, I run the auditions at Second City, and I've done it for 20-plus years. And when you watch the 10 or 12 people who are walking on stage, you pretty much know the five or six who are never, never going to make it because they are just exhibiting classic fear in front of you. Their hands are sweaty and they're fidgety, and they're not going to be able to improvise well. You can't be creative inside fear. Part of what we realize is failure is part of any process that craves originality. So what you have to do is you have to bake in opportunities for people to fail, and they do it with us publicly. We have this thing called the improv set. It's the third act every night. It's late at night. It's free. So the stakes are low. The stakes are low for failure. Businesses that want to be creative need to find opportunities and times where their employees can safely fail as well so that they won't shut themselves down out of fear.
So by doing some sort of an improv exercise at work where they do show that each of them can fail, they might allow themselves to be less afraid of failure in their work.
Yeah, that's one way to do it. Another way to do it is to have some fun celebrating things that didn't go right. Earlier in my career, I worked at an ad agency, and every Christmas party we did the Hanky Awards given for career-endangering stunts during the course of the year. So you made it safe to screw up. You signaled to the organization that it's not a death penalty if you don't get it exactly right. Nothing is perfect in the business world. The danger is when you whitewash over failure and you create conditions where you can't talk about it, where everyone thinks it's unsafe to talk about it. That's where things go really wrong.
Kelly Leonard, this all sounds great for a business. They might be listening to this and say right now, we're going to do that at our business and everybody's going to become more productive and more creative and more interesting and have a lot more fun. I wonder about the Second City, which has now become such a huge brand that is known all around the country. You must worry sometimes that you're relying on improv every night. You really are taking risks every single night. There's no safety net there. It might turn out to be terrible.
Yeah, it seems really idiotic, doesn't it?
And yet it works.
And yet it works. I mean, that's the thing. We've got the 55-year record of it actually working. I mean, you know, as a young producer at Second City, I first started producing in 1992. And when my cast started leaving, so when Stephen Colbert said goodbye and Steve Carell and Amy Sedaris and Tina Fey, I kind of thought the world was over. But then, you know, I stayed and more talent came in and they were really good too. So you sort of figure out that, nope, the talent will be there. This process works. We have failed. You know, we talk about in the book, there is a long list of failures, and that could be actually an entire second book we might do of all the ways we screw up. And by the way, we don't always yes and ourselves. We're doctors that smoke. We say no. And part of the thing in the book is to also know that when you do this work, you also have to forgive yourself and move on and then try to do it right again. It's never going to be perfect.
Kelly Leonard, Executive Vice President of The Second City. We've also been speaking with Tom Yorton, the CEO of Second City Works. Their book is called Yes And, How Improvisation Reverses No But Thinking and Improves Creativity and Collaboration. We've got an excerpt at hereandnow.org. Guys, thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.